All right, ready to dive into something new? Today, we're exploring the world of Romanian creditor rights.
Yeah, we're going to uncover how those loans, debts, you know, business deals, how are they secured over there in Romania?
And this isn't just some boring legal stuff. This is about a country trying to find that sweet spot between, you know, attracting those investments and keeping things fair for everyone.
Absolutely. And that's what makes Romania really interesting, you know. They're part of the EU, so they got to follow those rules. But they've also got their own way of doing things, like balancing that creditor protection with keeping a good business environment.
So they're walking a tightrope, huh? But let's get real. Why should I, as a business owner, even care about this?
That's the million-dollar question, right? Okay, think of it this way. When you get how Romania handles these creditor rights, it's like you get a peek into how their economy ticks. Are they all about making things super safe for lenders? Or are they more about giving businesses a fighting chance, even if things go a little sideways?
Okay, starting to make sense. But isn't this all, you know, buried in legal jargon somewhere?
It can be, but that's where we come in. We've got the goods, you have legal stuff, recent cases, even some numbers on those average payment times. We're going to break it all down.
All right, you've got my attention. You mentioned the EU, so they're playing by a specific rule book. How important is that?
It's huge. We're talking about directives, things like the recast directive. That one, it's all about late payments. Make sure everyone across the EU is on the same page. This isn't some minor detail. Mm-hmm. It's about setting the standards, making sure those creditors are protected, and those transactions run smoothly across those borders.
So it's like a safety net for anyone doing business with Romania, knowing those rules are there.
Yeah, exactly. It means things are more predictable, more transparent, especially for, you know, those creditors who might be used to different systems. They know Romania is playing by those EU rules.
Gotcha. Okay, so what about this balancing act we talked about? We've got those EU directives, right? But what makes Romania's approach unique?
Here's where it gets interesting. Romania has, well, a bit of a reputation for being more easygoing on debtors, especially compared to other EU countries. For instance, the average wait to get paid in Romania, about 65 days.
Wait, 65 days? That's what, over 2 months? I've got to say, that seems pretty long. Why so generous?
It's strategic, right? Longer payment terms, they cut both ways. On the one hand, it can be a good thing for businesses, mm-hmm. especially those that, you know, have longer production times. It gives them a little breathing room with their cash.
But then on the other side, that sounds kind of risky for those lending the money, doesn't it?
Exactly. And that's where those Romanian creditor rights come in. They've set things up to, like, balance that risk, give some security to those lenders. It's all about finding that middle ground.
Okay, so what are these tools that keep creditors happy when those deadlines are a ways off?
Well, let's say you're about to lend a big chunk of money. You want some guarantees, right? In Romania, you've got options, personal guarantees, autonomous warranties, and of course, good old-fashioned collateral.
Let's break those down a bit. Personal guarantees, is that like having a friend co-sign a loan?
Pretty much. It means someone, often a director or a third party, is vouching for the borrower. If the borrower can't pay, that guarantor is on the hook.
So it's like an extra layer of protection. What about those autonomous warranties?
Now, those are serious. Think ironclad, legally binding promise to pay. Really common in those international deals. It's like saying, we're good for it no matter what.
Wow, no pressure. Yep. I can see why those are a big deal, especially with international stuff. But let's be honest, sometimes even promises aren't enough. What about collateral?
Ah, collateral. The classic put your money where your mouth is. It's like insurance for the lender could be real estate, equipment, whatever's valuable that the borrower puts up.
So if things go bad, the lender can take that asset to cover their losses.
Exactly. It's all about giving that lender something tangible, you know, something they can rely on if things go south.
Makes sense. So we've got personal guarantees, autonomous warranties, collateral. These seem pretty essential, but do they always mean a happy ending?
Sadly, no. Businesses go under, things change, and even airtight contracts can't prevent every dispute. And that's where it gets even more interesting, because in this world of creditor rights, there's a big difference between being secured and unsecured. And trust me, that one word changes everything.
Okay, I'm hooked. Let's dive into this secured versus unsecured thing. What's the difference, and why does it matter so much?
Imagine a line forming to get repaid if a business goes bust. Those secured creditors, with their claims on specific assets, they're at the front. They're the VIPs, first in line to get their money back.
Mm.
Unsecured creditors, well, They're playing a different game.
So they're stuck hoping there's something left after the secured creditors get there.
Pretty much. They're relying on whatever's left after those secured claims are taken care of.
Okay, yeah. That makes it crystal clear why knowing this difference is so important. Let's dig deeper into those secured creditors. You mentioned mortgages. How do those work in Romania?
Picture this. A castle, right? Up on a hill in Transylvania. Now, let's say our listener wants to buy this castle, needs a loan. They go to a bank. The bank says, sure. But they're not just going to hand over a pile of cash without some guarantees, are they?
No way. That's where the mortgage comes in.
Exactly. The bank gives the loan, and they get a mortgage on that castle. This mortgage, it gets registered in Romania's land book, which is basically a giant public record of who owns what property.
So everyone knows the bank has a claim on that castle.
You got it. And it's not just castles, of course. Mortgages are for any real estate apartments, businesses, even that vineyard you've been eyeing.
So worst case scenario, the borrower can't pay. The bank can just take the property and sell it to recoup their money.
Right. They've got a clear path to getting their money back, thanks to that secured claim.
Sounds like a pretty good deal for the banks. What about stuff that isn't stuck in one place, though? Like equipment, inventory. How do secured creditors handle that?
That's where pledges come in. Let's say you're running a bakery, you need a new oven, a fancy one. Go to a lender, they agree, but they want a pledge on that oven as collateral.
So if the bakery owner can't pay up, the lender gets a new oven, maybe starts their own bakery.
Well, hopefully it wouldn't come to that, but you've got the idea. That pledge gives them a legal right to that oven. If the borrower defaults, they can seize it, sell it, get their money back.
It's like the oven is being held hostage by the loan.
Kind of, yeah. And pledges work for all sorts of stuff. Vehicles, machines, even things like receivables, basically. Unpaid invoices.
So secured creditors have things covered, with mortgages for real estate and pledges for, well, everything else. But let's talk about those who don't have that collateral city. The unsecured creditors, they're the ones really feeling the heat during those insolvency proceedings, right?
Yeah, they are. And it's not like they have no options, but they got to be on their toes, understand how things work.
All right, break it down for us. What's the first move for an unsecured creditor if they think a borrower's in trouble?
Speed is key here. Unlike those secured creditors with their collateral, these guys need to act fast. In Romania, they've got a small window, 45 days, once insolvency proceedings start to file their claims.
45 days? That's not much time, especially with all the legal stuff.
It's tight, yeah. That's why it's so important to stay informed, keep an eye on those debtors, be ready to move quickly if you see trouble.
No time to waste then. Any strategies these unsecured creditors can use to give themselves an edge?
Absolutely. One tool they've got is the promissory note.
Okay, what's that and how does it help?
Imagine you lend money to a friend. They promise to pay you back. Now, picture that promise written down, signed, legally binding. That's a promissory note.
A legally enforceable IOU, basically.
Exactly. And for an unsecured creditor, that can make all the difference. It's much stronger than just a verbal agreement, especially in those insolvency cases where a written promise carries a lot of weight.
It's like having that I told you so moment, but with a legal backing. Any needed tools in their kit?
You bet. Trade credit insurance is another good one, especially in those fields where payment times can be unpredictable, like an IG, for example.
So it's like insurance specifically for businesses giving credit to other businesses.
That's it. Say you're a software company, you land a big contract. Great news, right? But there's always that risk. What if the client defaults? Trade credit insurance can soften that blow.
If the worst happens, the client doesn't pay, the insurance covers at least some of the loss.
Exactly. It's a safety net, especially for those big contracts or when the market's a little shaky.
Okay, we've talked about the tools for both secured and unsecured creditors. But let's get down to brass tacks actually getting that money back, the debt recovery process. I imagine that can be a bit of a maze to navigate.
It can be, yeah. But luckily, the Romanian system is designed to be relatively straightforward, even for creditors coming from different legal backgrounds.
That's good to hear, especially in our globalized world. So how does this debt recovery journey usually start?
Believe it or not, it usually starts with a friendly conversation. Most creditors would rather avoid a whole legal battle if they can help it. It's about finding common ground, maybe a payment plan, and trying to keep those business relationships intact.
The let's work this out over coffee approach.
Exactly. But sometimes, even the best intentions and a good cup of coffee aren't enough. That's when things get a little more formal, legally speaking.
So what happens when those friendly chats don't work? What's next?
That's when the legal dunning process comes in. Might sound scary, but it's really just about sending a formal letter. The summons letter.
A firm but polite pay-up reminder.
You got it. The letter lays out the debt, the payment terms, gives a deadline for a response. Important step because it creates a record of the creditor trying to collect.
Building that paper trail, just in case.
Right. And if that summons letter doesn't do the trick, the creditor can take stronger action, like the payment order procedure.
Payment order procedure? That sounds serious. Tell me more.
Think of it as the legal fast lane for undisputed debts. It's a way to get a court order for payment without a long, drawn-out court case.
So it's quicker, more efficient, but only if the debt is completely clear-cut, right? No arguments about it.
Exactly. It's for when the debt's not in question. There's a contract, payment terms are clear, everyone agrees on the amount owed. Especially useful for smaller debts where a big court case would cost more than it's worth.
The legal express lane for debt collection. Are there limits to this procedure?
Yeah, it's not a magic bullet. It's usually for smaller debts, maybe up to around 2,000 euro. Anything bigger, more complicated, you'd go through the regular court process.
So different paths depending on the debt. It's about finding the right tool for the job.
That's it. But things get a bit more intense when we talk about insolvency proceedings. That's where a whole business's future is on the line. And creditors become pretty important players in this high-stakes game of survival.
Insolvency proceedings. Sounds intense. So what's the deal when a Romanian business is on the ropes and creditors are circling, hoping to get something back?
It's make-or-break time, for sure. But, you know, it's not like they just shut everything down right away. Romanian law, it's about finding that balance. Protect those creditors, yeah, but also give a chance to those businesses that can still make it.
So it's not just an instant game over?
Not at all. Actually, they really try to make reorganization work whenever it's possible. It's more like hitting the reset button than pulling the plug.
Okay, how does that work, this whole reorganization thing? Who decides what happens?
Think of a company drowning in debt. Reorganization is that life preserver. Chance to, you know, restructure things, renegotiate those debts, maybe even change up how they do business to get back on solid ground.
Sounds complicated. Who's calling the shots during all this?
It's a team effort. But those creditors, they've actually got a lot of say. Makes sense. They're the ones with the most to lose, right? They get to look over the plans, see if they make sense, and they actually vote on whether to approve it all.
So creditors get to be like financial advisors, making sure the company's plan is legit.
Exactly. They can raise flags, suggest changes, hold the company accountable. It's a high-stakes negotiation. Everyone trying to find that solution.
Hmm.
You know, minimize those losses, hopefully save the business.
High stakes, for sure. But realistically, sometimes those rescue efforts don't work. What happens then?
That's when you hit the final stage, liquidation.
So if reorganization is like hitting reset, this is game over.
Basically, yeah. If a company just can't recover, liquidation starts. Selling off assets, trying to get as much money as possible to pay back those creditors.
And I'm guessing that whole secured versus unsecured thing matters even more now.
Absolutely. Liquidation is where that pecking order comes in. Those secured creditors, with their mortgages, their pledges, they're still first in line to get paid from whatever's left.
So even when a company's going under, those secured claims still matter.
They do. Minimize those losses. Make sure those with the strongest claims get priority. Unsecured creditors, it's tougher for them. They get whatever's left after everyone else. And, well, sometimes there's not much.
Sounds rough, especially if they extended credit in good faith.
It can be, yeah. That's why understanding the risks, taking steps to protect yourself early on, that's key. But it's not like those responsible for a company going under get off scot-free.
Oh, there's accountability built in.
You bet. In bankruptcy cases, creditors owed a significant amount. They can actually go after the people responsible if it was, you know, bad management, fraud, that kind of thing.
So consequences for reckless business practices.
Exactly. Holding people responsible, whether it's fines or being barred from running a company. It's about making sure people are doing business ethically and responsibly.
Good to know there are safeguards in place.
Right. And here's another thing. Dealing with insolvency, especially in another country, can seem daunting. But Romania's system is designed to be pretty accessible, even for foreign creditors.
That's good, especially these days when business is so global. So what about cross-border debt recovery? How's that work in Romania?
Well, they're part of the EU, so they follow those rules for cross-border cases.
Mm.
Means foreign creditors, they have the same rights in Romanian courts as anyone else.
No home court advantage then?
Nope. Level playing field. And there are even specific EU tools to make it all smoother.
Like what?
Well, there's the European Payment Order. It's a simpler way to handle those cross-border cases where the debt isn't disputed. Basically, a fast track to a legally binding payment order across EU borders.
Sounds useful in the world of international transactions.
It is. And for smaller claims, there's the European Small Claims Procedure. Streamlined, less expensive, avoids those big court battles.
So even internationally, there are ways to get a fair resolution without too much hassle.
Exactly. But even with those frameworks in place, navigating another legal system, it's still tricky. Language barriers, different ways of doing things, it can all be a bit much.
What's the key takeaway for our listeners then, especially if they're facing a cross-border situation in Romania?
Don't try to do it alone. Find a local expert, someone who knows Romanian law, knows the debt recovery process inside and out. They'll be your guide, your translator, your advocate.
Like having a local Sherpa for the legal system.
Exactly. Helping you understand your rights, what you can do, making sure you're protected.
Great advice. We've covered a lot, the tools creditors have, how insolvency works, even cross-border cases. If our listeners take away one thing from this deep dive, what should it be?
Knowledge is everything, right? If you're doing business in Romania, even thinking about it, you got to understand how creditor rights work there. Knowing the rules, how to manage risks, making smart choices, that's how you protect yourself financially.
Well said. And on that note, we'll leave you to ponder the future of debt recovery in our increasingly interconnected world. Until next time.